In just a moment, Generations with Kevin Swanson. But first, this. The World View in 5 minutes.
It's Tuesday, August 2nd, 2016 AD. This is The World View in 5 minutes. I'm Adam McManus. Trinity Western University in Canada is trying to keep accreditation for their law program while maintaining biblical standards on homosexuality. They received a positive ruling from the Nova Scotia Court of Appeals while losing the case in Ontario. The case will likely be adjudicated at the Canadian Supreme Court. And Scotland's Supreme Court has ruled that the infamous Guardian Law is unconstitutional and violates basic rights to privacy for Scottish families. The law would have required a state-appointed guardian who would monitor parents and the home life for each child. Film producer, homeschool father, and activist Colin Gunn says this onerous law reignited a bit of a passion for freedom in the hearts of some Scots.
Well, this ruling was important not just because we had this victory where we were able to overturn the Named Person Act, which was a terrible idea, but it's also the first time in Scotland, at least in my lifetime, where Scots have got together and coalesced around an important liberty issue. This is the first time I've seen that happen in the socialist country that is Scotland. A group of people get together and actually fight something based on the issue of protecting family rights and based on the ideas of freedom. So this is a very good thing all around.
Contributors to the Evangelical and Reformed Gospel Coalition are publicly endorsing Hillary Clinton for president in the 2016 election. Pastor Tabidi Anyabwile has announced he'll be voting for Clinton, and Nick Rodriguez also wrote an article published in the Gospel Coalition encouraging evangelical pastors to endorse Hillary. Rodriguez writes, quote, "I think that conservative evangelical leaders need to use all the influence God has given them to encourage thinking Christians to vote for Hillary Clinton," unquote. The Evangelical and Reformed Gospel Coalition is mainly concerned that the other candidate, Donald Trump, provides an existential threat to the Republic and buttresses his point by alluding to a homosexual thinker writing in New York Magazine. Some Christians, however, are less concerned about the survival of the Republic. Open Doors is concerned with the rising persecution of Christians, and they say a Clinton presidency could be even more devastating for the Middle East. David Curry, director for Open Doors, told WorldNetDaily.com, quote, "If we get another 4 or 8 years of a laissez-faire attitude toward religious freedom from the next president, we can expect there to be an extinction of Christianity in the Middle East," unquote. Curry said the number of incidents of persecution has doubled every year for the past 3 years. Open Doors, founded by Brother Andrew, is the leading ministry that serves the persecuted body of Christ around the world. Proverbs 28:4-5 says, "They that forsake the law praise the wicked, but such as keep the law contend with them. Evil men do not understand justice, but those who seek the Lord understand it completely." Hillary Clinton's post-nomination publicity bump has put her 7 points ahead of Donald Trump for now. Clinton leads in the CBS News poll, 46-39%. Another shooting spree in Austin, Texas over the weekend ended with one woman dead and 5 others wounded. The apparently random shooting occurred in the entertainment district in downtown Austin at 2:30 Sunday morning. Police are still searching for a suspect. The state of Texas will now allow weapons into university campuses. The law took effect yesterday, August 1st. That's the 50th anniversary of the nation's first mass shooting, the University of Texas Clock Tower Sniper Massacre, where 17 innocent citizens were killed. The new law, heavily advocated by Governor Greg Abbott, allows concealed handgun permit holders to carry on all Texas universities. Some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we trust in the name of the Lord our God. Psalm 27. The U.S. economy is doing badly, except for consumer spending. Everything, housing, business investment, and inventories are in their worst shape in 7 years, except for consumer spending that is taking up 2/3 of the economy. Meanwhile, Household non-mortgage debt has risen steadily by 32% over the last 6 years, and household mortgage debt has risen over the last 4 years. The Lord Jesus Christ said, "No one can serve two masters. You cannot serve God and money." Matthew 6:24. Last year, a Texas police officer named Patrick Ray saved the life of 2-year-old Bexley Norville when the little girl was choking on a coin. Now, whenever Bexley's mom asks her who she wants to pray for, she says, "Officer P. Ray." CBS News reports last week that 3-year-old Bexley invited the officer to a tea party to thank him for saving her life. And that's the World View on this Tuesday, August 2nd, in the year of our Lord, 2016. Invite your friends to listen to this unique Christian newscast at theworldview.com. I'm Adam McManus. Seize the day for Jesus Christ.
Welcome, friends, to the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you today. Bill Jack in studio with us as we discuss worldviews and apologetics. And Bill Jack, part of Worldview Academy, he makes his living working with young people in the area of worldviews and apologetics. And one of the neat things about apologetics is you can keep asking the question why, and you can press people towards self-consistency. As you do so, their worldviews begin to betray themselves. It's as if you're working off of the third floor and you're drilling into the second floor as you're asking the questions. Then you drill down into the first floor. Then you get down into the foundations and eventually towards the footers, because you want to find the basic truth structure or worldview structure upon which the rest of their perspectives rest. And there's a little piece that you provide in some of your seminars from the Family Policy Institute in Washington that I'd like to share with the audience. Now, it's a video, but this guy is interviewing people on a campus. Give us a little introduction first.
Yeah, it's a UW, University of Washington campus. And tends to be a very liberal place to begin with. But this shows how the educational system has won the day, has trained a generation to think from a different worldview. And it has come into the culture in the issue of the bathrooms and locker rooms accessibility to both male and female, depending on how you feel at the moment as to what you want to be.
So that's the issue. That's where we are on the third floor. We're talking about whether transgenders should use the bathroom of their choice. That's the political issue of the day.
Right.
That's the salient issue. That's the discussion point around
It's the spear point into the culture.
But that's not the worldview.
No, behind it is the rest of the shaft of the spear
that
pushes it.
That's right. So let's walk through this. We're going to play this piece from Family Policy Institute. This is a young man that's walking around the University of Washington campus, and he's getting people's perspective on whether transgenders should use the bathroom of their choice. So here we go.
There's been a lot of talk about identity lately, but how far does it go? And is it possible to be wrong? We went to the University of Washington to find out.
Are you aware of the debate happening in Washington State around the ability to access bathrooms, locker rooms, spas based on gender identity and gender expression?
I think people should be able to have access to the facility.
I think bathrooms could and potentially should be gender neutral because there doesn't need to be a classification for differences.
I think people definitely should have the ability to go into whichever locker room they want.
I feel like at least public universities should do their best to accommodate for those who do not have a specific gender identity.
You know, whether you identify as male or female and whether your sex at birth is matching to that, you should be able to utilize the resources.
So if I told you that I...
So here's the print, the setup.
Yeah.
Okay. The setup is this is the issue facing the culture. Now, what he brilliantly does is he pushes the envelope. The interviewer pushes people to be consistent with what they say they believe and then lets the weight of reality crush false worldviews. So he then takes it and says, what if I told you I was a woman? Let's hear what he has to say.
Okay, so he ups the ante. Okay, if I claimed to be a woman, what would you say? Would you allow me to use this bathroom?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Was a woman, what would your response be?
Good for you. Okay, like, yeah.
Nice to meet you. I'd be like, what? Really?
It tests their credulity a little bit here.
I'd ask you how you came to that conclusion.
If I told you that I was Chinese, what would your response be?
I mean, I might be a little surprised, but I'd say, good for you. Like, yeah, be who you are.
Now, this guy is not a Chinese woman. This guy is about a 5'8" white male.
Right.
And he's testing the limits of their credulity here, isn't
he? He's pressing them to be consistent with what they say they believe. They're giving lip service to the politically correct notions of the day. And yet, if they're forced to live with the conclusions of these assumptions that they're spouting, then there's going to be a disconnect. And that's what he's pressing them to.
One of the words that you're going to hear, and you've already heard it, is the word feel. I feel that, I feel that, I feel that. Also, you don't get the sense that they have extremely strong convictions. This is one thing I've picked up. Their convictions aren't super strong. Their convictions are very, very strong on one thing, and that is there is no possibility of truth or an absolute right and wrong. So therefore, they have to have sort of a question mark in their language as they come to the conclusion that they're going to do the most perverted thing possible. But there's not a lot of conviction in it, and they use the word feel an awful lot.
Right. So they can't definitively say right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole point of the American system of education these days.
Maybe think you had some Chinese ancestor.
I would ask you how you suddenly came to that conclusion and why you came to that conclusion.
I would have a lot of questions just because on the outside I would assume that you're a white man.
If I told you that I was 7 years old, what would your response be?
I wouldn't believe that immediately.
I probably wouldn't believe it, but I mean, it wouldn't really bother me that much to go out of my way and tell you no, you're wrong. I'd just be like, oh, okay, he wants to say he's 7 years old.
See, it's the biggest offense in our culture is offending somebody. So I don't want to offend you by telling you you're wrong. I won't go out of my way to say you're wrong. I don't want to offend you. And this was illustrated, we take students out on campuses, and we took them to a farmer's market in Illinois at Worldview Academy. So Wednesday afternoon, take them to the farmer's market in a public park, and the organizer is very upset with us, and she calls the police over. Well, the police are fine with what we're doing because they understand the Constitution. In fact, I had great conversations with these two cops, prayed with one of them. It was just cool. One of them was a Christian. Son went to Christian school. But one of our staff, we have college staff who kind of monitor what's going on, and they're just, the college staff is sitting there, and one of our groups of students comes up and is talking to him and trying to share, you know, Christ with him, kind of joking with him, you know, say, hey, you need Jesus, because there's very few people out in this park, and so they're just practicing the tool and they're talking to them. And he motions to them, go do what you're supposed to do, stop wasting time and do what you're really supposed to do, which is go out and talk to people who need to hear about Jesus. So he kind of shoos them away, makes the gesture shooing them away. Well, this guy comes up and says, are these students bothering you? And this college student says, no, they were just having a conversation. Well, they're really not supposed to be out here, you know. My mother runs this park and they're not supposed to be out here. And he said, no, they're not bothering me. And as he turns to leave, the college staff waves at our students, and this guy catches and says, are you one of them? And the college student says, yeah. He said, well, I didn't mean to offend you. The biggest offense is to offend, and yet he was trying to shut down free speech, but he didn't want to offend.
Yeah.
And that's the state of our culture. It is this really strange love-hate relationship with free speech but no offense, right?
Mm-hmm.
The biggest thing is we have a right not to hear anymore.
We've discussed that before on the program, that there is a a sensitivity with the millennials that they don't want to be offended at all, and yet they still maintain a powerful, passionate desire to see transgenders use the restrooms.
Right.
So it's attention.
Yeah, and that's what you're hearing in the voices of these students being interviewed, that they know something's not right, but they don't want to offend by saying to the interviewer, you're wrong. Let's continue.
You feel seven at heart, then so be it. Yeah, good for you.
So if I wanted to enroll in a first grade class, do you think I should be allowed to?
Probably not, I guess. I mean, unless you haven't completed first grade up to this point and for some reason need to do that now.
If that's where you feel, like, mentally you should be, then I feel like there are communities that would accept you for that.
I would say so long as you're not hindering society and you're not causing harm to other people, I feel like that should be an okay thing.
If I told you I'm 6 feet, 5 inches, what would you say?
That I would question.
Why?
Because you're not. No, I don't think you're 6'5". If you truly believe you're 6'5", I don't think it's harmful. I think it's fine if you believe that. It doesn't matter to me if you think you're taller than you are.
So you'd be willing to tell me I'm wrong?
I wouldn't tell you you're wrong.
No, but I'd say that I don't think that you are.
I feel like that's not my place as, like, another human to say someone is wrong or to draw lines or boundaries.
No, I mean, I wouldn't just go like, oh, you're wrong, like, that's wrong to believe in it, because, I mean, again, it doesn't really bother me what you want to think about your height or anything.
So, I can be a Chinese woman.
You... sure.
But I can't be a 6'5" Chinese woman.
Yeah.
If you thoroughly debated me or explained why you felt that you were 6'5", I feel like I would be very open to saying that you are 6'5", or Chinese, or a woman.
It shouldn't be hard to tell a 5'9 white guy that he's not a 6'5 Chinese woman. But clearly it is. Why? What does that say about our culture? And what does that say about our ability to answer the questions that actually are difficult?
Well, one thing is for sure, that God gave them up to a depraved mind. There's a point at which man has given up on any rationality whatsoever. And at this point, this is similar to walking into an insane asylum in the 1940s and doing the same series of interviews. The only difference is that these people aren't walking inside of an insane asylum. They're just walking outside of the insane asylum.
No, they are in the insane asylum.
Which is the world we live in today.
Yes, but it's the educational institutions of our day.
Yes.
They're confined to the ideas that they are required to spout. And therefore, they are insane. They are in the insane asylum. But it's all around us.
Well, it's the point at which there is no possibility of determining the difference between true and false, right and wrong. And you see, where it's right for you, it's right for you, it's right for you, unless it's harmful. See, there's points at which they're, again, inconsistent. If it was harmful
What is harmful?
That's exactly right. We just undermined any possibility of distinguishing right and wrong, and now suddenly we're bringing right and wrong back into play by saying we can't allow you to do something or to act like you are something if it's harmful to others. Well, why is that the case if we have just undermined any possibility of absolutes in the area of right and wrong? So, again, huge inconsistencies in their worldviews, and they laugh at themselves at points. So they see that they themselves have given up any possibility of sanity or rationality, and they laugh at themselves, but they feel that they must continue on this path towards complete irrationality.
And that's what we need to do. We need to push people to the logical conclusions of their argument and let the weight of reality crush false worldviews. We create that sense of dissonance, that uncomfortableness, that there's I'm saying something I really can't live with. I'm saying I believe this, but I can't live this way. And that creates the dissonance that Christians can then come to and say, speak truth and grace.
In just a moment, another example of just this from Planned Parenthood that are absolutely, completely contradicting themselves in the same sentence. Friends, worldviews betray themselves in words. Just listen. Just study the words, and you'll determine the worldviews behind them. And most of the time, it's irrationality, it's self-contradiction. Be back in just a moment on the Generations Radio broadcast.
It's hard to imagine Christian pastors going to jail for their faith, and it's just as hard to imagine Christian businessmen fined $135,000 for not baking a cake in celebration of a homosexual wedding. It's hard to imagine America turning into a communist state that persecutes Christians and rewards the most aberrant. Will Christians just let it happen? Should Christians just let it happen? These are important questions, my friends. This is Kevin Swanson. And I wrote the book on freedom because I wanted to build a case for freedom. A biblical case. A historical case. And let me tell you, the history of freedom is the most inspiring story you'll ever read. Have you heard the story of the Magna Carta, Bannockburn, Leyden, and William the Silent? The American Pilgrims and the Battle for King's Mountain. How will we fight for freedom in this generation and the next? Well, tell the story first. The story of freedom. Let's leave a legacy for freedom for our children and our grandchildren. Get a copy of the new book, Freedom for Each of Your Children and Grandchildren, at generations.org. That's generations.org.
And we are back on the Generations broadcast now, as we study words and determine worldviews. And here's another excellent example of this from World Magazine, an interview that John Stonestreet did, where he brought up Planned Parenthood's recent meme in which they put together one of the most self-contradicting statements I think I have ever seen. You deserve to parent your child without fear that he or she will be hurt or killed. Freedom from violence is reproductive justice. And those are the words accompanying a picture of an African-American woman holding a young boy. That's a meme put together by Planned Parenthood, friends. And there it is. You deserve to parent your child without fear that he or she will be hurt or killed. Freedom from violence is reproductive justice. Now, this is newspeak if I've ever heard newspeak before. Remember George Orwell's excellent little novel, 1984, in which he spoke of newspeak, in which truth turns out to be a lie, in which peace turns out to be war, in which false turns out to be true, in which wrong turns out to be right, in which evil turns out to be good. Friends, this is the worldview expressed by modern language, and it ties into the relativism we just spoke of in the last segment, Bill. John Stonestreet, by the way, as he comments on this, says it is one of the most bizarre, misplaced, awkward, and ironic things I've ever seen. A shameless attempt at advertising by pretending to have some sort of empathy. The reality is that Planned Parenthood kills babies and the abortion giant targets minority women in particular. The abortion rate is among African American women is 3.5 times that of white women, and nearly 80% of Planned Parenthood centers are within walking distance of minority communities, according to Stonestreet. And there they are, saying this: you deserve to parent your child without fear that he or she will be hurt or killed. Freedom from violence is reproductive justice. Now, reproductive justice is what? Reproductive justice, as defined by Planned Parenthood, is the right to kill your child. Now, let's read that one more time. Freedom from violence is the right to kill your child. You get it? There's a contradiction there.
Yeah.
Don't you get it?
There's no justice and no reproduction.
Freedom from violence is the freedom to kill your baby. Well, that may be a freedom from violence for yourself, at least for the time being, until your other children grow up and euthanize you when you're 72 years old.
Yeah.
So yeah, at least for the time being, you may be free from violence. But freedom from violence is to act violently anytime you want to. There's some contradiction there.
Yeah, it depends this depends on what you mean by violence, right? What do you mean by is? It's the Bill Clinton-esque parsing of terms.
And why can't decode it? Why not just get self-consistent with what you're doing? Why don't Planned Parenthood say, yes, we kill black babies at 3.5 times the rate at which we kill white babies? Why don't they just say that? Why not just put it on the website, we kill black babies, lots of them. That's what we do. Why not just admit it? For a couple of reasons. One is it's not politically correct to do so. There is something of a conscience that is still there amongst those that choose to kill their own babies and those that are pressing them to do so. There is still something of a conscience. And so therefore, Bill, I think that humans want to whitewash the things that they do. They don't want to just admit that they are the people that they are.
That's why we were masters of euphemism. Euphemism, it comes, euphemism, okay? EU comes from the Greek word meaning good, and euphemism is a saying. So it's a kind way of saying something rather unpleasant, a euphemism. It's saying my mother passed away, my mother went to be with the Lord, my mother fell asleep. It's a kind way of saying something rather unpleasant, my mother died. Well, that's what Planned Parenthood is the master of, euphemism, just like the Nazis were the masters of euphemism. They called the killing of Jews the solution, mm-hmm. right? The final solution. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to call it killing Jews until near the very end.
Reproductive justice. What does that mean?
Yeah, it's a euphemism.
What is that? Reproductive has to do with the reproduction system in which people have babies. Animals have babies. Humans have babies. Would it be the justice to have, the right to have babies?
You would think so.
Well, you see, right away, that's the way you would interpret reproductive justice. Justice is a right. Reproduction is having babies. So it would be the right to have babies. Well, they take abortion, call it reproductive justice, and in the end, what they're saying is reproductive justice is the right to kill your baby. And then they place it in the context of this African-American family and pretend that they are issuing some empathy towards African-Americans instead of just acknowledging that we kill your babies and we kill black babies wholesale.
Yeah.
Well, Isaiah chapter 5 is the passage that ties into this. And friends, please be sure that you're sure that you get the truth and that we're not covering up the truth by the words that we use. Let's get self-consistent with the words that we use and be sure that they're defined properly and understand what we're doing, especially in terms of ethics, by way of the laws of God. Isaiah chapter 5 says, woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. And that's what man does. He self-justifies himself constantly. And what used to be a complete abomination, according to modern approaches, becomes the right thing. Why? Because of the shift in language. Think about what used to be the mating with strange flesh, that which would be the most unnatural forms of sexuality, in which man contradicts his own natural instincts. Even animals don't contradict their own instincts, but man goes beyond that. He begins to contradict his own instincts and does that which is against the instincts, the natural instincts with which he was created. And he begins to commit crimes and sexual sins that are just unspeakable in previous generations and refers to the process as gay, as a happy thing, as a pleasurable, wonderful, blessed thing. Friends, this is the way that language is used. Reproductive justice is being translated as killing babies. Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe to them that are wise in their own eyes and prudent in their own sight. Woe to them that are mighty to drink wine and men of strength to mingle strong drink, which justify the wicked for reward and take away the righteousness of the righteous from him. Friends, that pretty much exactly defines what the Supreme Court of the United States has done in the Obergefell decision, the Roe v. Wade decision. Isaiah 5 speaks directly to these strong men with incredible strength, incredible self-confidence, who act in the most autonomous ways that people have ever assumed in the history of mankind. And they justify the wicked for reward. They do what they can to reward the wicked and what they're doing, and they take away the righteousness of the righteous from him. They do what they can to persecute the righteous at the same time. Well, this is a condemnation of the highest courts of this country. And I hope that if any of them are listening to this program, they take this warning to heart, because there will be a judgment day in which Jesus Christ, the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, will call every action and every word into judgment.
You know, that is the basis for my latest DVD, Tearing Up Tracts Leading to Destruction, is that passage you read out of Isaiah. And that language lays the tracks, which are the ideas that carry the consequences, which are the boxcars filled with people's lives. The Nazis didn't lay the tracks to Auschwitz immediately. They did it a decade before by using words and laying the ideas, the tracks in people's minds that eventually led to the physical laying of those tracks that led to the death camps.
I can hardly imagine the horrific consequences of the ideas that are being fulminated and received by the masses in Christian colleges today across this country. Some Christian colleges as well, at least the liberal colleges, but certainly the public universities. The relativism of the day, the complete ethical relativism of the day, the sexual anarchy of the day, and all of these other things that now have come to full fruition in just the last 6 or 7 years will bring about some of the most devastating, horrific consequences in the years to come. It's hard to imagine the sort of Nazi devastation or the Soviet devastation that will come about in this country. We certainly have seen these things happen in other post-Christian nations around the world, and this, it appears, will happen in this country as well, because ideas, as the ideas we have shared with you today that come off of these secular campuses, will bring about the most horrific of consequences. Friends, read the book Apostate, The Men Who Destroyed the Christian West, that there be no surprises. Be sure that you are not surprised. There's no reason on earth why any Christian should be surprised as to the horrific consequences that will come about in the next 20 to 30 years if they understand the ideas that bring about these consequences. It's all there in the book Apostate, The Men Who Destroyed the Christian West, available at our website, generations.org. It's our brand new website, friends. It's a brand new store. Check it out at generations.org. This is Kevin Swanson and Bill Jack in studio, inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.